This is the day that the Lord has made, and we shall rejoice and be glad in it. I'm delighted to be the preacher in this summer series, and it's great to be back in a place that I call home. Appreciation is first extended to Dean Heal for the generous invitation to return to BU. He and I chatted yesterday by phone, and he asked me to pass along his good wishes and greetings while he's away. Thanks to Ray Bouchard for his friendship over the years and for the administrative assistance with my travel arrangements, and to the entire chapel staff and program participants who are assisting us in worship. Time does not permit recognition of my many professors, mentors, and friends, several of whom who are here today, but I would like to at least publicly acknowledge Dr. Robert and Mrs. Beth Neville, and to thank Dr. Neville for his outstanding leadership and service during my graduate school years at BU, as well as his strong and abiding support. The same can be said for Mr. Ed and Ms. Diana McClure of Brookline, who is actually Ms. McClure who encouraged me to remain in Boston when I thought about returning south. And I cannot help but think of the remarkable life and dedicated and hard work of Dr. John Silber. There are also several family members and friends tuning in around the country, as well as my daughter Mackenzie in South Carolina. So a warm welcome and hello to all of our listeners in the greater world. As we think about emerging adulthood, I think of Apostle Paul's message to the early church, which is relevant to all of us, including young adults. He tells the early Christians to not conform to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of their minds, so that they may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. I like the Living Bible's translation the most, which says, "Be a new and a different person in all you think and do." Paul is against a philosophy that says, "Be like everybody else," and he is against thinking that if the majority culture is doing something, then the majority must be right. It's one thing for the majority to rule, but it's another thing for the majority to be right. Paul does not want the early Christians to only follow the latest and most dominant view. Many people then and now are intimidated by what somebody else does or thinks. But Paul discourages the early Christians from trying to please everybody, and he encourages them to consider their own distinctive identity, to engage their own particularity, and to answer the question, what is a Christian? Paul's command against conformity contains two parts. The first part is do not. The second part is how not to conform to this world. So the two parts are do not and how not. The how not is by renewing your mind or having an inner experience of faith and love. This inner experience in the New Testament, especially in St. John chapter 3, is called a new birth, or being born from above. Paul Tillich would describe this experience as a creative mental readjustment. Being born again results in making better choices and producing different habits which ultimately create one's character. In verse 2, Paul is clear in his command against conformity. He first says, do not, and secondly explains how not, but he does not say why not conform to the world. So we should ask, why not, Paul? Why not imitate the way of the world? After all, we live in the world, so why not be of the world? We are connected through family, friends, organizations, fraternities and sororities, other volunteer associations, political parties, social and educational and financial institutions. We are in the world, and there are both conscious and unconscious influences that affect us through sales and advertisements, media propaganda, music, commercials, and images from the television and internet. These are some of the ways we experience the world. We live in the world with inextricable connections, so why not conform to this world? Paul does not answer, but maybe he thought there are fundamental flaws with this world. The world is flawed due to sin, evil, religious and social division, pride, terrorism, racism, sexism, and all other kinds of isms. And for every historical period of peace and tranquility, there are counter periods of war and violence. Perhaps this is why Paul says, do not conform, because what is acceptable is entangled with what's unacceptable. What's virtuous is mixed with what's vicious. The good is intertwined with the bad. So being counterculture as a Christian is Paul's way of transforming the world. At the time of this letter, Paul was in Corinth on his third missionary journey. He had never visited Rome, but he was writing this church because in the first century, Christians were confused about their citizenship. A major question dealt with an allegiance to civil government. Loyalty was demanded by Claudius, who was the emperor of Rome, but loyalty was also demanded by Jesus, who once said, "Render to Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and to God the things which are God's." What complicated this message is that Christians had a dual citizenship. They were citizens of time and citizens of eternity. They lived on earth, yet claimed to be a colony in heaven. Paul also told the Corinthians, if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Christians are what Stanley Hauerwas of Duke University calls resident aliens, people with both a religious and a political identity, or what Martin Luther called a doctrine of two kingdoms, the kingdom of the world and the kingdom of Christ. Christians in Rome were conscious of their dual citizenship, or being two at the same time. They were like many roads and highways in American cities. For example, Highway 25 in Greenville, South Carolina is the same as White Horse Road. In Boston, Interstate 95 is the same as Route 128. In Richmond, Virginia, Route 1 is the same as Lombardi Street. They're often both at the same time. So too with these early Christians, being in the world, they had to pay taxes and obey the law. They may have had a Social Security card and required to stand and pledge allegiance to a flag or sing the national anthem. But being not of the world, they obeyed a higher law, the law of love and righteousness. It was not easy for them living in Rome. And due to the victories of Alexander the Great, the Greeks and later Romans became leaders in the Western world. It was once said all roads lead to Rome. There were big buildings, giant water baths, large statues of gods and goddesses such as Zeus, Apollo, and Aphrodite. The Greek culture began over 700 years before Christianity, and the early Christians did not have that kind of history to point to. They were a minority group trying to spread the good news about a new religion, different from their Greek and Roman predecessors. And Paul reminds them to not surrender their supreme loyalty to any time-bound idea or earth-bound custom. For at the heart of the universe, there's a greater truth beyond our feeble rationality. There's a greater wealth that is richer and more satisfying than material possessions. There is a greater love that is more lasting than the temporary and unpredictable fluctuation of human emotion. There's a greater help that is beyond all human options and earthly hopes. Instead of looking around at what the Greeks and Romans had, Paul encourages these Christians to be themselves. He writes, "Do not conform to this world. Be a new and a different person in all you think and do." Amen.